This is the Cane's Corner Podcast with host Adam Gold, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now here's the host of the Cane's Corner Podcast, Adam Gold.
Welcome to the Cane's Corner Podcast. I am Adam Gold. It's been a while, hasn't it? We got a lot of stuff to get to tonight. We're going to talk to Corey Lavallette of the North State Journal. We are 8 days away from the preseason home opener against Tampa. Hurricanes have just 4 preseason games. They'll be home on the 28th. That's a Tuesday. Then October 5th. That'll be against Nashville. That's a Tuesday. They've got 2 road games not on Tuesdays. And then the opener on October 14th on a Thursday as we get this sucker cranked up. It's here. We got a lot to do. What we're going to do, we're going to talk to Corey Lavallette, then we're going to take a very, very brief time out, and then we're going to come back with a preseason series entitled, I'm making this up, Meet the New Guy. There's a lot of new guys. So Ian Cole will be first in the hopper, and we're going to try to get to as many of the new guys as we can before the start of the season. So a couple of things we're going to talk about with Corey Lavallette are, is it possible that this team is better today than it was when the season ended back, what, June the 8th, was it? Either the 6th or the 8th. I forget which one. Is the team better today than it was then? I will tell you up front, I think it is. At least on paper, we haven't seen it play yet, but I think it is better. We'll talk about why it ended. Not just when, but why it ended the way it did against Tampa. And then we'll kind of just kick around the Jesperi Kotkaniemi and maybe does Carolina have to protect itself against somebody else doing to them what they did to Montreal, stealing, buying a good player because Kotkaniemi is a good player. So there's a lot of things to talk about. Goaltending, defense, who plays with Jacob Slavin? Is that Tony DeAngelo? So we'll do all of that with Corey Lavallette of North State Journal. Then we'll break and we'll talk to Ian Cole, brand new member of the Carolina Hurricanes. Guy's name is on the Stanley Cup twice with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Hurricanes have 2 guys like that. The other, of course, is Jordan Staal. So without further ado, let's get this sucker cranked up, shall we? I cannot believe how close we are to the start of everything happening all over again. Corey Lavallette, North State Journal. I mean, didn't the season just end?
No rest for the weary, that's for sure.
I mean, I do feel like it just came to an end. So I want to start there. What are your thoughts on, you know, we're separated now by what, 3 months, roughly, maybe more? I can't add very well. So what are your thoughts on last year and why it ended, not just when, but how?
Well, obviously, Tampa's a really, really good team. And, you know, I know teams played them closer than the Hurricanes did, but that's a tough matchup for anyone, and that team won't be as good this year as they were the last 2 years. And but I think the Hurricanes learned a lot about themselves. They learned, you know, which of these young guys they think have a chance to make them winners, and you can just tell by what happened with the roster. You know, they let a couple young guys go and brought in maybe some more. You know, brought in some young guys too, but brought in a couple veterans that maybe the kind of signings that this team didn't have in recent years. They seemed pretty content, you know, letting young guys get their shots when the opportunity arose. And right now it almost feels like maybe they'd rather have veteran guys to call up or populate some of those, you know, lesser roles. And so I think they learned a lot. You know, it's still going to ride on the main guys, but you know, I think they learned that maybe some of the pieces around the edges maybe weren't what they needed as far as some of the young guys.
It's certainly it's a very good very young but still very experienced core group of players. In a way, is the way it was talked about, you know, right after the fact. I mean, Carolina probably was the better team in game one, didn't get anything out of it, should have scored early, didn't. Andre Vasilevsky was the difference. The game that they won, they probably weren't the better team in that game. It's just kind of the vagaries of the sport. But, I mean, they were close and could have won two or even three of those games, and maybe it's a different series. If you win game one, you give up a bad goal. But I never got the sense that they were really that close to Tampa. And even though I think Carolina was probably better than the Islanders, certainly better than Montreal, although I don't think Montreal was really ever in that series for any second. Maybe Carolina just, I think, because you kind of alluded to it, the makeup of that team might have been a little bit, I mean, soft is not the right word, but just not ready for that. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe a little starstruck. And you know, you mentioned, you know, the game one goal, which is one that Alex Nedeljkovic would want back. And then game three, you know, you cannot, if you get a chance to beat Andre Vasilevsky on a bad night, to do it. And Peter Mrazek was not good. And I think we learned that the team said, well, these aren't the guys. And I think the Nedeljkovic thing is maybe more layered than that for sure. But, you know, I think they looked at it and they said, if we have to turn over this whole goaltending fandom, then so be it. But, you know, they lost that series, you know, in a big way because of goaltending. Those two games, were lost in the net, I think. And, you know, that's the difference in a series often.
It's funny. I talked to Alex a couple of days after the series was over, and I was struck by his level of maturity and accountability. I love everything about Alex Nedeljkovic. And you say, you're right, it was layered. In my conversations about Ned and the organization was one of, they never really believed in Ned, and they didn't believe in him before last season. They felt like maybe as great as he was, and I mean, he was the rookie of the year, rookie goaltender of the year, wasn't the rookie of the year. Obviously,
he was goaltender of the year for the AHL,
right?
Not even just rookie, but goaltender of the year, right?
But yes, he was. But they never truly believed, and I think that the playoffs was more confirmation bias for them that, okay, even though he was awesome, I would argue that even while giving up some goals and some goals that he wants back, it could have been far worse against Nashville had he not made as many great saves as he did. But I just feel like they just never really believed in him, and that's fine. I actually think that there's a fair chance that Carolina is at worst the same in goal, and I think their ceiling is probably significantly higher in goal going into this season with Antti Raanta and Anderson
and Freddie
and Freddie Anderson. Yeah. I mean, is what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really understood the. I don't know if we want to call it national, since we're talking Canada and the U.S., and I'm probably talking about Canada, but this national media idea that the Hurricanes got worse in net. You know, Frederik Andersen has won a crap ton of games.
Yeah.
And he's played on good teams, sure. I mean, that Anaheim team was good when he was there, and then obviously the Maple Leafs were good. And he wasn't good last year, but what are you going to bet on? Are you going to bet on 1 year from a guy that otherwise you looked at and you were like, well, you know, we don't know if he can be an NHL guy, or a whole bunch of years with 1 year of Anderson not being good? You know, I don't think You know, he totally lost everything that made him a good goalie. And the Hurricanes have a way of making goalies look good. I mean, what goalie has not looked good behind this team outside of Scott Darling, who is completely out of the league? Like, you know, I mean, they made a, and I hate the Zamboni driver
right.
terminology, but they've made every goalie they've had look good. I mean, James Reimer wasn't great last year. The numbers weren't great. But they still made him look good a lot.
Yeah, they did.
So when you take Anderson, who I think is a really talented goalie and a big, big goalie, you know, they haven't had a guy like this since Scott Darling, who was that big. And then Antti Raanta, who I think is probably a top five goalie in the world if he can stay healthy.
Right.
If he could ever stay healthy, talent wise, he's spectacular. But. You know, he's never seemed to be able to string it together for other than for one season, just because it's a constant injury thing with him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you roll the dice on him, but he's your backup. And, you know, I think again, Frederik Andersen has proven he can carry a load. So it should be interesting to see. I guess I'm with you that it's a wash at worst, and there's the potential here that, I mean, If we're talking in 8 months or whatever and say, you know, Frederik Andersen's a finalist for the Vezina, are you surprised?
No, not behind Carolina's defense. Not at all.
I probably wouldn't be surprised. And only one of the four goalies we're talking about has ever gotten Vezina votes, by the way. Peter Mrazek never gotten a Vezina vote.
Right.
Only Frederik Andersen has ever gotten Vezina votes. So there's only one guy here that we're talking about who has ever reached any kind of top-level NHL goalie status. And that's Frederik Andersen.
I'm not sure who votes for Vezina. I know you voted for the Norris last year, and you gave a vote to Brett Pesce. Did it? Am I correct?
Yes, I think I was the only person in the world. So
you're one of the smart ones. You're one of the smart ones. I am admittedly biased, but I love Brett Pesce. I love everything about his game. We're going to get to him in a second. So let me just, Corey Lavallette, North City Journal, is here on the Canes Corner podcast. And pretty soon these will become morning afters, and I'm dreading the lack of sleep already. Brock McGinn, Warren Fogle, Dougie Hamilton, who we'll talk about, Jake Bean, Morgan Geeky, Ned, Peter, out. Jesperi Kotkaniemi, Derek Stepan, Ethan Bear, Ian Cole, Brendan Smith, Tony D'Angelo, Freddie Andersen, Antti Raanta in depth as they have depth at all levels of the roster now in terms of guys who are on two-way deals who could go, who could come up and get you out of a week or 2 weeks where they didn't have it before. So Maxime Lajoie doesn't have to dress in a playoff game. No offense to Maxime Lajoie, who was not offensive, but obviously he was just there to give some guys a rest, not really to make an impact in the game. And there's other guys too. Can you make an argument that even with, and I'll just specify the loss of Hamilton, that this is a better team today on paper, of course, because we haven't seen them play, than they were a year ago?
I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being the case. And, you know, the big thing in this is going to be Tony D'Angelo, and I'm glad we're using his name. Doesn't seem like it gets used everywhere.
he who shall not be named. He's not Lord Voldemort, as much as people want to make it out to be.
You know, for everything that went on in New York with him, I think, you know, this might be a last chance for him, and by all accounts, from everything I've been told, he's fallen in line. You know, everybody wanted to get all worked up about the vaccination thing. And, you know, and Mike Sondheim said it in a tweet last week that he, you know, he didn't have, there wasn't even a pushback or anything. He just went and did it. I think that's going to be the key, at least on defense, is if he can be 80% of Dougie Hamilton, then, at least offensively, then I think things fall into place pretty well. I think Ethan Bear is a really good bet. I do not understand what Edmonton did on the defense this offseason, but I think that's a good bet for them. Ian Cole is a, I don't want to call him a fire hydrant because he's not short, but that's a big guy. Yep. I mean, he's 225, and he's the kind of guy who is not going to get moved out of, from in front of the net. He's not going to get moved out of the corner. You know, the way Jake Bean got thrown around in the corners by Pat Maroon in the playoffs, that will not happen with Ian Cole. It certainly won't happen if Brendan Smith is playing. So a little more snarl back there that's maybe been lacking. I know people thought that Joel Edmondson was that. I mean, I think Joel's a physical guy, but I don't think of him in the Brendan Smith mold right. of being a guy who really can be rough and tumble back there and tough. Joel's a tough guy, but that's not his priority. Brendan Smith maybe is. I think maybe it is a better team. It's going to hinge on a couple guys, just like it always does. I think the guys that are key parts of the team, as long as they don't get hurt, are going to be fine. It's going to be the D'Angelos, the Kotkaniemis, can Niederreiter be good in presumably a third line role? Stuff like that, I think, is what it's going to come down to.
All right, let's talk about a couple of guys. You mentioned one just a second ago, but we're going to set him aside because Tony D'Angelo is going to be a focus. And this is not so much about Tony D'Angelo as it is who plays on the top pair with Jacob Slavin. I think you said something to me, it was probably on this podcast, right about the time, maybe right after the season ended, that maybe Tampa is telling us a lot by how they deploy their best defensemen. In other words, not playing together. So they've got three elite guys in Hedman and McDonough and Sergachev, and they don't generally play them together. It's not like Sergachev doesn't ever play with Hedman. He does, or McDonough, he does. But for the most part, they just separate them, and they let each of them play with somebody else. So I don't think we're going to see Pesci and Slavin together, although we will at times in games. So who gets that spot that Dougie Hamilton is vacating as he goes to New Jersey? Who plays top on a top pair with Jacob Slavin?
You know, my gut tells me that it should be Ethan Bear, and I think that the reason for that would be is that you have more of an investment in Ethan Bear than you do in Tony D'Angelo. And I think Ethan Bear is a better all-around player right now, too. Mm-hmm. He may not be ultra-productive on offense, but he has that ability. He's got a good shot. He's willing to jump into the play. All the things the Hurricanes like, he'll do that at least as well as Brett Pesci would do offensively. And I think Brett, you mentioned my vote for him, and that was a big part of it, was Brett's offense was, yep. was really good last year, I thought. But to me, I think that makes the most sense. But if you need, if they find they need more offense from the back end, certainly Jacob Slavin is gonna clean up any issues that that his partner will have. We right. learned that, in the Dougie Hamilton era, and really just the Jacob Slavin era. So I think, they could run Tony D'Angelo there if they want to.
Yeah, Rod Brind'Amour loves options, having Ethan Bear. When they made that deal, and I was always they were going to trade Warren Fogle. They didn't. They had made their mind up on Warren Fogle, and this might have been a year in the making, to be perfectly honest. And part of it had something to do with him only having a one-year deal this past year, thinking that he was, at least in terms of his production, better than he actually was, not just a foot soldier with some upside. I think he looked at himself as somebody who can play on a second line, and at times he could. But for the most part, he just never... That one series against Washington was essentially the Warren Fogle experience. I always wish he had leaned into not being, kind of a pot stirrer, but why not? Why not lean into being a pot stirrer if that's what your size and aggression tells the world you are? Why not? He didn't have the personality, to actually lean into that. And I think they were disappointed in that. I hope he plays well for Edmonton, because I think if you're 6'3", 215 pounds, and you have some skill, you should probably be better than a 30-point guy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I've said that a long time about Warren, if he just didn't have the mentality to be that kind of guy. And, you know, for everything that Brock McGinn did well here, and he was, you know, he's the perfect do things the right way type of player. That's something that he lost as an NHLer, was that kind of gray area play. He was a borderline dirty junior player. He had a few suspensions.
Oh, Brock.
Brock. And, Brock kind of lost that too. And now the next generation of that is Jameson Rees, who is just a terror to play against. Yeah. And I'm curious to see what, you need guys like that, right? I tell this story all the time. When my kid played soccer, he was a little guy, and he kept, he'd be fighting for the ball, and he'd be elbowing the kids in the chest to get the ball. And I said to his coach, I'm like, hey, I don't want to say anything because you're not going to listen to me, but he's throwing elbows out there. And she's like, you know what? I can't teach that. I'm not gonna discourage that, because if he plays, and he didn't end up playing, he said he played hockey, he didn't end up playing soccer, but she said to me, if he's already got that in him, he's gonna need that down the road. And it's not something you can teach, right? Warren Fogle's a good guy, and I mean, you can be a total ass on the ice and still be a good guy for sure.
Right.
But, I think Warren's a good guy on the ice. He's more reckless than mean, I would say. You know, the times he's gotten himself into those situations, right, he's maybe just a little out of control. So, I agree totally. I think that was a...
I mean, what happened with TJ Oshie was more reckless than mean-spirited, which, I don't know, maybe that's why Washington didn't beat the hell out of him the next time they played. All right. First of all, I'm going to miss Brock McGinn at 2.7. Maybe that's a little high, but it ain't that high for McGinn based on how tough he is. But maybe that toughness wanes as he gets into his mid to late 20s, or late 20s now. How'd you like what they did with Jesperi Kotkaniemi?
I mean, you have the money to do it, the cap space, for all of the Tom Dundon cheap talk that everybody wants to throw around. He's not cheap when it comes to the salary cap, and they had salary cap room, and a really, really talented kid. And I tweeted it out a while back. I don't have it right in front of me right now, but he had only played more than, I think it was 15 minutes, something like 22 times in his career.
Right.
And that's just a disservice to a young player that you're trying to develop into a top six player. Meanwhile, Svechnikov had played something like 100 and 120.
Right.
There's one thing when you get the Zach Boychuk situation where you're forcing a guy, and maybe Montreal did force Kotkaniemi that first year, but second year, third year, you gotta carve out a role for a kid like that and let him play. And the Hurricanes have been good about, hey, you're a young center, let's start you on the wing, Sebastian Aho. Mm-hmm. Let's start you on the wing, Martin Natchez. And now Kotkaniemi, he's going to be on the wing, it sounds like. I think it's an interesting move. He's he's not the greatest skater in the world, but he's a smart player. He's got the frame to be he's already a 200-pound guy. He's got the frame to be even bigger.
Yeah.
Bigger than Trocheck is. I think it's going to be really fun to watch him. I think the pressure is going to be off a little bit compared to Montreal, even with all the fervor around all this and the money and all that stuff. There's a good security blanket here, with having at least three guys from Finland on the team with him. And Sebastian Aho's gone through this exact scenario pretty much, other than the switching teams part. The offer sheet, the big deal, the expectations that come with that. The expectations of going, becoming a legit NHL center, all those things. I mean, he's got a ready-made guy that can talk him through this.
What are the chances we see fins to the left, fins to the right, with Kotkaniemi playing with Aho and Teravainen?
I mean, I think it'll surely happen at some point. I think Svech is a is a really, really underrated passer, and he could, you know, I think other players will benefit from playing with him too. So for as great as that SAT line is together, you know, there are going to be times where if things stall out in the other three lines, you could, you know, you can easily, you know, move Svechnikov down, and he could ignite a line too. So he's going to, you know, he's obviously an X factor this year all around. It's how he performs.
Two more quick things for Corey Lovellette. First of all, based on the Kotkaniemi offer sheet and the angst and the trolling, which I've said this before, I found entertaining. I get why people thought it was off-putting. I didn't understand Jack Todd losing his mind over. He needs to understand how the offer sheet process works. If you want the player, and the Hurricanes demonstrated that they wanted the player, then you must overpay for the player in restricted free agency. It was clear that while Montreal can say they wanted Sebastian Aho, if they really wanted him, they would have paid him $10 million, not $8.45 or whatever the number was, because Tom Dundon, if the threshold had gone higher, Tom Dundon probably would have let Aho walk if the number got out of the realm of possibility, but he was only slightly overpaid at roughly $8.5 at that point. Now, Kotkaniemi is grossly overpaid, but that's what you have to do. But there were a lot of people who were really angry. So now, how fast would you sign Martin Natchez to a contract extension so nobody offer sheets him for $8 million?
I think those are talks that need to happen, but you know, the Hurricanes aren't going to be in a bad cap situation, and that's what the corner that Montreal painted themselves into. You know, they went and, you know, thought, oh, well, we've got all this extra cap space because Shea Weber's not going to play. Let's go spend it, and then didn't think things through, obviously. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. With Trocheck and Niederreiter's deals coming off the cap, there's not, you know, an urgency in my mind to, you know, be too worried about it, unless somebody is, you know, going to go and make the kind of offer, like you're saying, that's going to cost you, you know, a couple first round picks. You know, I mean, I think they obviously want to have Martin Natchez. But I wonder if that would happen for, you know, would happen for a winger, a guy who's a winger right now, unless you're absolutely sure he's a center. That's why I don't think anybody has made a move on Brady Tkachuk. I'm a little surprised that something hasn't happened with Elias Pettersson, as a center, but he had a bit of a down year last year with the injuries and stuff. So I don't think that's, you know, I don't think all these GMs are suddenly going to get brazen and start throwing that stuff around. Like I said, they're going to have the cap room unless they drastically alter what they have right now.
The roster basically looks pretty much set, barring an injury. Seth Jarvis either makes the team, which I doubt he will, or he goes back to junior hockey, which, again, this is 2 years in junior hockey that Seth Jarvis probably didn't need. It would be great if he could play in the American Hockey League, but he can't. So it looks to me like, barring something just otherworldly, that Seth Jarvis will end up back with the Winterhawks. But is there any other, you mentioned Jamison Reese, is there any other young guy that you could see theoretically making the roster? A Jack Drury, a David Cotton, a Jamison Reese, anybody?
Maybe if there's an injury situation, I think that's a possibility. Dominic Fox, a guy to watch, just because he's a bit of a natural scorer. To me, I wonder with guys like Drury and Cotton that are more middle of the lineup guys, you know, are they better suited just getting better than, right, you know, when you have skill, when you have this high end skill like Dominic Fox has or like Seth Jarvis has, then maybe you make it impossible for the team to not give you a chance. Whereas guys like Drury and Cotton, I think, you know, Jack Drury's gonna be on the Brock McGinn plan, I'm pretty sure, where he'll, you know, they'll cook them nice and slow in the AHL and maybe give them a taste here and there and then bring them up. I think that's probably what will happen is like you said, the roster is pretty set, and there are a couple veteran guys that I think are good plug and play NHLers if you need them. That, you know, Stefan Nilsson and even Maxim Bastunov is a, you know, interesting guy. You know, Andrew Podorowski, we know he can play in the NHL if he needs to.
Potsy's back. Josh Levo is also capable of playing.
Yeah, well, I think Josh Levo is going to be, you know, could very well be in the starting lineup on day one. We'll see how everything shakes out. But he could be he'll be on the roster either way. I think he'll be a 13th
forward
if he's not playing. But
is this team actually going to carry an extra forward and an extra defenseman?
I think you're going to have to this year just with COVID stuff and protocol. Even if you're vaccinated, you know, you just don't know. And there's rumors around now about, you know, they might allow, a goalie taxi squad again. And they certainly have a good guy for that. A guy that you're not trying to develop as your number three. So
Alex Leon.
Right. So, I think you kind of have to, I think. And they, you know, the Hurricanes kind of want to get higher up into the cap anyway, just with the way long-term injury works.
Right.
The more you're over the cap, the more space you get.
Yep.
So carrying two extra guys isn't the end of the world for them, you know, because then they're going to go and put Jake Gardner on long-term injury. And, it actually buys them more space. So long-term injury is a really weird, really weird thing. But I think that's probably what will happen.
It worked for Tampa. Final thing. Give me a prediction on 2021-22 for Andrei Svechnikov now that the burden of playing for a contract is behind him.
Well, assuming we play 82 games this year, which I hope, I think all this stuff is in the past, these 50-game seasons.
Yeah.
I think he scores 30 this year. I really do. I think he's going to score maybe, we'll say 31 goals. How's that?
31.
And be a, be close to being a point-per-game player. Maybe a mid-70s guy. I think he's going to have a monster year. I mean, I think he's going to be an absolute superstar. And I know some people have their doubts after how last year went. But I think, they said he was healthy. I don't know that he totally was, to be honest with you. But I think he's going to have a monster year.
Everybody I talked to said that, because first of all, he's always the happiest guy in the room. I love, he just exudes happiness. And I love that about him. Right?
Him and Steven Lorenz, right? The two of them.
Yeah, they could be the new dynamic duo in that regard. I'm not saying that Svech wasn't happy last year, but the people I have talked to just think that he didn't necessarily handle the pressure of playing for a contract very well. And not everybody likes that feeling. There are guys who in their walk years, basically, just go nuts and post huge numbers. And I think maybe Andre put a lot of pressure on himself, and that pressure's off, and he settled. I mean, I think that there is a 50% chance that that contract is a bargain in 3 years, an absolute flat bargain in 3 years, to the point where people are around the league going to go, that's all they're paying him? You know, maybe not quite to the degree that we deal with Brad Marchand or Patrice Bergeron or even David. They're all on bargain deals. David Pastrnak, Alexander Barkov's
Nathan
deal
McKinnon,
is crazy.
Yeah.
Right? Nathan McKinnon, right. Those are insanely low deals. So not quite to that degree, but I think Svech has all the ability to be a $10 million a year player. To get him at less than $8 million, that's just incredible. So
yeah, and I think it's going to be a big year for him in a lot of ways. You know, he was really close with Warren Fogle and Dougie Hamilton, and both those guys are gone. So we know Svech loves hockey, and I'm not saying that those guys were a distraction to him getting ready to every right. night, because we know Svech works as hard as anybody, on the roster. But I'm curious about how he matures this year. Without those two guys there, and then the contract stuff done, like you mentioned, and just getting a year older, a year stronger, getting back to what is going to be a normal NHL again. You know, so many of these guys have he's played one season that was a normal NHL season.
Right.
It's crazy to think, but he hasn't experienced really anything other than that first year. He hasn't experienced, hasn't had the full NHL experience. So, he's going to walk into a lot of buildings this year, and those teams aren't going to be that familiar with him other than on film. And they're going to get a dose of what his talent is, his strength, his shooting, all of that stuff. And I think he's going to make a lot of teams that maybe haven't seen him for a year look pretty bad.
Can't wait to watch it. And I'll see you very soon, Corey Lavallette. We will be at PNC Arena. We are recording this Monday evening on the, what is today, the 20th of September. Happy fall to you in 2 days. But a week from tomorrow is the preseason home opener. Can't believe watching hockey in 8 days.
Crazy, but let's do it. I'm ready. Let's go.
All right, I'll see you on the fifth floor. Thanks. Quick break, then Ian Cole will join us on the other side on team number 6 in the NHL.
As part of my brand new series, which I just made up today, get to know the new guy. Ian Cole joins us, brand new to the Carolina Hurricanes, a defenseman who is now with his sixth NHL team. But, man, you have played in some great NHL cities, and we are going to talk about that. First of all, welcome to Raleigh. I'm sure you've heard all great things, because nobody would tell you bad things about Raleigh, North Carolina. How do you like it here so far? I'm sure you'll love it.
Yeah, you know what? It's been fantastic. You are correct. No one has said a bad thing about it. Everybody I've spoken to that has moved here from various parts of the country has said that Raleigh is absolutely fantastic. And I've only been here a week, but I'm starting to feel the same way.
Oh, so you've been here a week. Family settled in. I know you have a little one. What is it like adjusting to new surroundings with a young child and just a family trying to make a transition?
Yeah, you know, it's always tough. It's always stressful. You know, moving is always, kind of a logistical nightmare, especially, selling a house, buying a house, doing all that. But, we're able to get through it well. The little guy does not care in the slightest. As long as he can run around and play hide and seek, he's happy as a clam. So, it's been good. You know, we're actually getting into our house, this weekend. So, that'll be nice. We're in Airbnb right now here in Morrisville, which is great. So, everything's been good so far. It's close to the practice rink, so I can go in there every day, which is great. Transition's been good so far.
How many guys are back practicing already?
We almost got the whole team. We had a little recovery day yesterday, which was nice. So I haven't seen the guys going in today. But, yeah, I mean, pretty much everyone is Sorry, I got a fire truck going by right now.
It's quite all right. Fire trucks are one of the staples of life.
Exactly. Hopefully going to help someone. everything's great. There seems to be a lot of guys in town, and we've been skating together for the most part as a team for about 2 weeks now, week and a half. So, yeah, it's been great.
So I assume it's a son that is playing hide. I don't know why I'm assuming it's a son, but playing hide and seek. Are you good at hide and seek?
Well, you had a 50-50 chance on getting it right, so that was good. Yes, it is a son, and he loves hide and seek. He just runs around all day. Loves playing on the stairs, which we're trying to. Kind of trying to change that behavior a bit. We're like, either go up the stairs or down the stairs. You don't play on the stairs. It's been, he's been awesome. I mean, You know, I'm 32 now, so kind of basically geriatric for the hockey world at this point. But you know, as far as life goes, you know, I still feel pretty young. So it's, I feel very fortunate to have a little guy at a, you know, pretty young age, be able to play with him and get a ton of time this summer and, you know, kind of watch him grow up, which has been fantastic.
I'll tell you, I have a 13-year-old, just turned 13 yesterday. And and it keeps you young. And we had him when I was about, 42, which I don't know how good you are with math. You can find out, figure out that I'm 55. And so it keeps me young, and I coach a soccer team and all of that. And so it forces me to stay kind of active. But you are maybe geriatric for the hockey world, but you are significantly younger than I am. So let me get into a couple of things with you here. How does an Ann Arbor kid go to Notre Dame? I mean, with the reputation of Michigan hockey, and I think they had the first 19 picks in this most recent NHL draft. How does an Ann Arbor kid go to Notre Dame? How does that work?
Yeah, you know, I defected a bit. but it was kind of a – I'll go through it quickly, but it was a story that kind of spanned a couple of years. Michigan had me in freshman year of high school. Hey, we're really interested. I think you're a really good player. I would love to have you come to Michigan. Okay, great. Keep working hard. We'll get back to you. Okay, awesome. In that meantime, that freshman year of high school, Notre Dame had me in and said, hey, we want you to be a cornerstone of our team. We really want you to, you know, be here, and we're going to fully commit to you. Like, here's a scholarship offer. I'm like, whoa, totally blown away. But in my head, I'm thinking, you know, well, why would I ever want to go to Notre Dame? Like, I'm going to Michigan. What are you talking about? Like, I'm not going to Notre Dame. In the next year and a half, I sat on the scholarship offer. I got scholarship offers from everywhere else in the Midwest, you know, Wisconsin, Miami of Ohio, Michigan State, all these other places. And, you know, in that time, went back to Notre Dame, you know, a handful of times and just fell in love with the school, the university, just kind of the feel of it. It's such a very collegiate feel, right? It's not like in the city. It's very kind of closed off. You go through the gates. There's no roads through campus. You walk or bike everywhere. And I love that. It was great. It was very different from Ann Arbor, University of Michigan in that sense. And in that meantime, you know, Michigan stayed in contact. We just kept saying, hey, we're interested, but never actually offered a scholarship. So basically I sat in the scholarship Notre Dame for a while, seemingly from my point of view, Michigan just thought I was going to go there regardless because I was an Ann Arbor kid. And my dad was like, well, you know, I'm not paying for you to go to school. If they don't make a scholarship offer, choose somewhere else. and in that time, I fell in love with Notre Dame. So, you know, it just kind of got to the point where, like, all right, well, if Michigan's not going to step up to the plate here, then I'll go to Notre Dame and be very happy with it. And, you know, I'll say it was one of the best decisions of my life. I absolutely love Notre Dame. It was absolutely fantastic. Great experience, great school, great hockey team. It was a very, very good decision. So very happy with it.
So your fallback school was Notre Dame. As a kid, when I was applying to colleges, I think my fallback school was the University of Delaware, which is fine. Very similar football helmet to Michigan, but not quite the same academic rigor as maybe
well,
you
I'll
have.
Tell you what, it started out as a fallback school and then became number one option, and Michigan became a very distant, like, fifth at that point. So it worked out very well. Let's just say that.
There's no doubt about that. It is interesting, man, because we know Michigan and Notre Dame, not necessarily friends. There is a rivalry there, but good for you. And certainly that gold helmet doesn't hurt. You got to play in a Frozen Four, which is cool. I know it doesn't necessarily compare to a Stanley Cup or playing for the Stanley Cup, and you won it twice with Pittsburgh. Explain to me what the thrill is like of playing in a Frozen Four as a college kid.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. I played in that Frozen Four my freshman year, so that was a pretty awesome experience. Kind of just getting there and going right into the fire there right away, awesome experience. Really kind of helped you
adapt quickly, right? You know, you're going into very high pressure situations as an 18-year-old kid. And, you know, fortunately I was into some, I was playing a lot and they were using me in a ton of different situations, which was great. But yeah, no, it was one of those things where, you know, I think anytime you can learn, you know, younger, the better, to manage that pressure, to manage those situations, to manage, you know, how hard it's going to be, you know, only translates well. And I think that, you know, you mentioned the Stanley Cups, you know, you get going in those situations and you don't even think about, holy crap, this is the Stanley Cup Finals. You're just like, man, just another game, just keep going. And I think that's a very beneficial, you know, mentality to have.
Ian Cole is with us as we are getting to know the new guy. So let's transition into some actual hockey stuff here with the Hurricanes. So what is your familiarity with players? And I'll get to Rod Brind'Amour in a second, but what drew you to Carolina? I know you had a good year in Minnesota, and I think initially that's where you wanted to be, but this certainly worked out, I think, very well for Carolina. So how did this whole thing come about?
Yeah, you know, I was in Minnesota, loved my time there, loved the guys there, great experience. And you know, initially, you know, loved to go back there. As things kind of progressed free agent-wise, showed that, you know, maybe that wasn't really going to be an opportunity, unfortunately. You know, and it basically got to the point where free agency opened up, and we were able to start talking to teams. And Carolina came and said, hey, we're really interested, and we want you to be a part of this. And I think as a player, you know, once you get used to winning, you want to continue to win. Mm-hmm. The idea of going to play for a team that has no chance of winning is very unappealing to me. You know, you go in Pittsburgh, very winning team. Colorado, very winning team. You know, Minnesota had a great year last year. Even to start my career in, you know, in St. Louis, they were picking us when I was there to win Stanley Cups. We never did, never really came close. But initially, you know, we had a very good team. Like, I think you just get addicted to winning in the sense that you don't ever want to go back to a bottom feeding team. Or I wouldn't even know what to do in that situation. So you want to go to the best team you can. And certainly the Carolina Hurricanes checked that box for me. You know, they're one of the top 2-3 teams in the East and a very real possibility of winning the Stanley Cup. And that's the situation you want to be in as a player.
And there's also a couple of guys who, one is no longer underrated. I don't think Jacob Slavin is underrated anymore, because when people keep saying how underrated you are, obviously people start paying attention. But I think Brett Pesce would fall into the category of an underrated player. So you're going to a core of still relatively young blue liners with an incredible reputation and a high ceiling.
Yeah, and I would tend to agree with you. I don't see these guys as underrated anymore, right? You get to the point where you're, you know, one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference for 2-3 years now, and people start going, oh, these guys are really good. Let's get these guys on TV and let's watch them. And I think you kind of see that transition over the past couple of years with this team. And I know around the league, the guys that you just mentioned are very highly thought of. And I think it's only a matter of time before, you know, everyone outside of Carolina feels the same way.
All right, now talk to me about Rod Brind'Amour and your conversations with Rod. And I've known Rod a long time. I knew Rod as a player. And now having been, you know, covering him as first an assistant, then a head coach, I know what Rod is about. But what was your reaction talking to Rod, and how has that progressed?
It's been great. You know, I spoke to him pretty much right away as soon as I signed. And everyone talks about how great of a guy he is, and I think that's very accurate. You know, it just comes off awesome. And I think that that's kind of where this family aspect in this team really comes from. And it starts from the top. And, you know, I think that he builds that culture and he kind of demands that culture. And you see that in how much the guys in this team, you know, both like and care and, you know, want to succeed together, which I think is fantastic. So,
are you at all concerned that Rod will score higher on the fitness test than you?
Well, I'm certainly the whole point of this summer was to make sure that wasn't the case. It may happen, but gosh darn it, I'm going to try to make sure it doesn't.
That would not be a reflection on you, by the way. So,
well, I would take it as one.
Well, that's probably okay, but Rod is, look, I don't know if you saw the picture from the bubble up in Toronto a couple of years ago, but they were playing Frisbee, and Rod did not have a shirt on. And Rod's probably mad at me for even bringing this up. And he has like 0% body fat. I can't, he's 50 years old, and it's frankly, it's annoying. All right, let's get into a couple of other things. The captain of this team, Jordan Staal, also a former Penguin. That's certainly a good idea. He won a cup there as well. I joked with him after the season about, you know, the possibility that the media would come back into the locker room. And I said, come on, you really missed us, didn't you? And Jordan played it off. Yeah. No, we didn't miss you. You have a reputation of being, and this conversation has already been fun for me, but you have a reputation as being a guy who is fun to talk with. So that has really waned over the last couple of years for obvious reasons. So what are your thoughts on the way the access for media works? Do you like it? Which is, you're certainly not going to insult me because I think it's a lot easier for players.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that it was more of a, you know, a necessity.
Oh, yeah.
I guess let's call it.
Just trying
early.
To keep people alive.
Exactly. Which is always a good thing. You know, people alive is better than people dead. And you know, I mean, I think that it's been, you know, nice that you can just get undressed right away and leave the locker room. That being said, I don't necessarily view the media as an obligation. I think it's just, you know, people you have conversations with and you talk about it and you go your way and right. Let them do their job. So, I don't view it as a burden or an obligation. That's just the way I look at it. So I don't mind doing it. But also as far as being able to get to the gym, get your workout and get home at, you know, 11 or 11:30 or 12 o'clock at night, there's some positives there too. So, which, however they want to do it, I'm fine with. You know, Zooms are fine. You know, we can rip through stuff pretty quickly there. So, I have no real preference. However it works out best for everyone else is fine by me.
Yeah, let's make everybody as happy as possible. Happy people are better than not happy people. Ian Cole,
and alive.
Yeah, the added benefit of staying alive and out of the hospital is such a good thing. What's your impression of some of the Canes? I mean, Sebastian Aho's young. Andrei Svechnikov is young, but these guys have been around the league for a while. This is year 6, I think, for Aho. This will be year 4 for Svechnikov. What's your impression of some of the Canes' young, you know, I'll just say superstar caliber offensive players?
Well, I've, you know, watched them afar here for a couple of years, and even though they're young, their development has been on a very steep curve. And I think you'll only continue to see that to, you know, get better and grow and mature. You know, I think we have a great leadership structure here in terms of the personnel and the caliber of player that we have here. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that will only bode well for the future. You know, they have a very young, talented core, which is what you always want to see in a team on the upswing. And, you know, and I think that everyone in place here, from the players to the staff, will continue to guide and help those guys grow and become even better players. So it's exciting.
This will be in the category of low-hanging fruit questions, but I am curious. You have played in some great fan environments. You mentioned St. Louis wasn't close to winning a Stanley Cup, but that is an environment. In St. Louis that, I mean, it's just electric for players to experience. And then Pittsburgh and Colorado and Minnesota, obviously, although last year was kind of weird because we had sporadic, you know, just kind of gradually growing fan attendance throughout the season. We only got to here in Raleigh, although in the playoffs I think we did get to a full building. But what is it, you know, whether you've played in a PNC arena that was jam-packed or not, what does that environment do for you as a player?
Well, to be honest with you, I played in PNC arenas that are packed and PNC arenas that are essentially empty.
Yeah,
I've kind of you've been around long enough, and you kind of span the gambit there. A lot of red seats in a couple of those games, but I think for the most part that the fans in Raleigh have been great. They may not be as large as, you know, say, you know, Pittsburgh or Minnesota or something like that, but the knowledge that they have. The intelligence they have about hockey, how dedicated they are to the team and its, you know, formation and its standard and its values, I think is very admirable. And, you know, I just got here. I don't know super well, so I'm kind of speaking off the cuff. But
sure,
it's certainly something that is exciting to me, and I'm excited to get to know them. And hopefully they're excited to see us play and then get to know me. So
I'm telling you, The people that I speak with, and my own personal feeling is that you're going to be a tremendous addition here. Wait till you check out the tailgate culture. It's sort of like when hockey meets college football. It's that much. The parking lots are electric. You'll see for the opener next month what that's like, and then when the playoffs roll around, the place is just an absolute madhouse. Let me ask you one more kind of. It might not pertain to you, but you experienced the World Junior Championships. You were a two-time member of the WJC team back when you were a developing young American player. Olympic hockey means so much to players. What do you think the Olympics means to the NHL players specifically?
Well, I think that what it means to guys probably differs based on the country that they're from.
Mm-hmm.
I think it probably means more to, let's say, a Russian than it does to, you know, I don't know, maybe a German. I don't know.
Okay.
Just throwing that out there. Don't know. I just know that the Russians are very adamant about it. That being said, I think across the board, it is extremely important to a lot of guys to get to have the ability to represent their country on a national stage or international stage. And I think that it's one of those things that guys really were, really wanted to be a part of. You know, I know the last go around, you know, it was tried to use against us in CBA negotiations. And I think rightfully the guys were like, no, we're not essentially paying you to go to the Olympics. That's right. Ridiculous. However, I think that everyone's able to come together in this situation for this games and make it work. That's obviously the IOC and the IHF and the insurance and all these things that play into that. Generally speaking, I think that it is very important to guys across the board. And I think that them being able to figure this out, them as, you know, a whole bunch of people, them being able to figure this out and make it happen, I think, you know, one, gives the guys that are going a chance to represent the country, which is huge. And quite frankly, it gives the guys like myself that are not probably going a nice little break. So I think everyone benefits from it.
What will you do with that break? Will you watch Olympic hockey, or will you go find a beach somewhere in the winter?
Well, I think that my plan right now is to just work out and try to get as jacked as Rod.
Good luck with that. I mean, that is aspirational. If I ever heard something.
a little 3-week training camp. Get ready for the playoffs.
I think Ian Cole is going to be a regular pregame, postgame. Guy's got a lot to say. Thoughtful, fun, enjoyed it, and can't wait to actually, as he said, meet in person. Which, again, happens very, very soon. First preseason game at PNC Arena a week from Tuesday, a week from tomorrow. We're, again, taping this Monday night, so September 28th, after the Ryder Cup is over. I am Adam Gold. This is the Canes Corner Podcast. Until we do it again. Bye.
You've been listening to the Canes Corner Podcast with Adam Gold. Don't forget there are many ways you can listen to this podcast, including streaming at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL SportsFan app, and you can also subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and TuneIn. Thanks again for listening to the Canes Corner Podcast.